My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Deceptively Fast Podcast. I'm Seth Payne. I played in the NFL for a long time. Now I host a radio show in Houston, Texas. My guest today is kind of a quasi-co-host, Drew Hodgson. We were teammates together on the Houston Texans, and today we started talking about the release of Tim Tebow. We moved on into athletes in the media, and from there we went to what it's like to travel as a retired professional athlete when you have to scale down your expectations a little bit. If you enjoy the show, please subscribe. If you're already subscribed and you super enjoy it, give it a 5-star review. That would be awesome. I really would appreciate it. Here we go. So our guy Tebow got cut. Are you distraught over that?
Yeah, I'm pretty devastated that the stars actually lined up the way they were supposed to.
Did you feel like that was a mercy killing? Do you think Urban maybe actually wanted to give him more of a chance to prove himself, but realized, all right, if it doesn't work out, it's just going to get more and more embarrassing?
No, because I kind of feel like Urban Meyer is the sort of guy that does exactly what he wants to do. So if he had any kind of inkling to keep him around to benefit his own grand plans or whatever it was that he had in mind for him, I think he would have done it. I think it was probably pretty clear he just couldn't do it.
Yeah, you know, I'd seen Urban with some quotes at one point talking about how different it is in the NFL because you have to cut guys. It's a difference, you know, in college football, you got almost 100 guys and you can do with them whatever you like. You can develop some guys, you keep them around, and In the NFL, it's just completely different. You have to cut those guys. And it always seems, this is what I wonder. It's easy to say at the beginning of training camp, well, there's 90 guys. What's it even really matter? That's just one guy at the back of the roster. Where when you really start dicing the numbers and realizing, wait, I got to make decisions on guys who can play special teams. And there's, it's convenient or simple sometimes to say, like, well, the back 10 or 20 guys aren't going to make it anyway. Those are guys that you might call up later in the year. So you really can't waste time on a guy that doesn't look like he's going to contribute at all. And oh, by the way, he's 35 years old.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you only have so many days to get good, clean looks at guys who are actually going to help the team.
Yeah.
So if he doesn't seem like the kind of guy that at the very least, and you know, I mean, better than I do for sure, that it's just there are guys that really are a force on special teams. They're productive in other areas. And it's, I can't speak to whether Tebow was doing that, but I just don't think that a 35-year-old guy who never had to do it was probably dominant even in that part of the game. So he just wasn't doing enough to turn heads.
How rich do you think Tim Tebow is?
That's a good question. I mean, he was a first round pick, right?
So it's a first round pick. I'm guessing he tithed at least 10% of that. And then he had to pay about another.
Right.
Yeah. So, and I don't know what the deal is in Colorado with state income tax or whatnot, but figure he gave another 40% to Uncle Sam or so. So half of that was gone. I'm guessing he wasn't a high first round pick. So it was probably a few million dollars.
He got more than almost anybody, you know, in the first round around when he got drafted is going to make more than that. And then
it was 5 years, $11 million. So he made about, after taxes, he would have made about $5 or $6 million. And then another couple minimum contracts after that. And then I bet. Yeah, I mean, ESPN used to dole out $1 million contracts like nothing. And I'm guessing I bet he makes $1 million a year on ESPN.
There was that stretch there where he, you know, he had some endorsement deals. I mean, he was on TV just doing kind of the broadcasting deal. And like you said, a few years ago, they were just dropping truckloads of money off of people that didn't even know what they're doing.
That's
so.
one of the funniest things I've seen in this business is as ESPN has made all these cuts. A lot of the personalities and talents like take it pretty well and they're appreciative. You know, saw Kenny Mayne be super appreciative of his time there. But then there's these others that are so damn entitled and don't understand just what a fantasy world bubble they were living in at ESPN forever. Because there was nothing that justified paying a lot of those people their salaries. Like there were so many people making over $1 million a year that there were not people tuning in specifically to watch those guys. Like in radio, it's pretty simple. You have a radio show, you have endorsements, and you either make money for the station or you don't. And it's a really simple ROI.
Right.
Like, okay, guys that bring in a lot of advertisers get paid really well. And if you're not bringing in advertisers and be, you know, tied into that is having a whole bunch of listeners and everything, then you're not going to get paid that money. Where ESPN, I feel like they always wanted to have the preeminent talent. So they just threw boatloads of money at anybody and everybody, many of whom were very talented, but still were making way more money than they were actually worth.
It didn't always feel like it was the preeminent talent across the board. It felt like they had actual legitimate talent in tenure and guys who were savvy. And then they had guys that were just preeminent names. And so they would get a name and throw them in, hoping that they would garner some kind of attention. And then they would learn on the job or whatever it was, which was just like, to me, you know, I'm like, hey, those guys really... It's interesting that they didn't see what it actually looks like until after they left for the guys that get out of football and realize that just because you're good at football doesn't mean you're actually hyper skilled at everything.
Yeah.
And then they learned that lesson afterwards.
Well, like what they tried with Jason Witten, that was a classic case. Hey, NFC East guy, you know, Hall of Fame caliber player, played for the Cowboys, not just NFC East, but he played for the Cowboys. He'll be just like Romo and you throw him in there and they've come around though. Cause now a lot of their former athletes are guys who weren't necessarily the preeminent superstars. Like Orlovsky would be the classic example. Orlovsky is one of their top guys and he kind of earned his way into it just cause he was good. And you don't have to pay him. You don't have to pay him, you know, money that competes with what guys were making as NFL players.
Right.
So like you try to lure Peyton Manning into the broadcast booth, you throw $20 million at him. He's like, well, you know,
I got a half billion. It was so weird. I mean, that we would text about it, about, you know, Jason Witten and some of those other guys. Cause it just used to, I mean, it would like trigger me to no end. Like my blood would just boil listening to that guy. Cause it was the worst possible combination of trying to mount some kind of shtick that he was trying to latch onto, combined with just like brutal misinformation, which made no sense. Made no sense because he knows. So it was really weird.
You know what? It's interesting. What gets guys sometimes is you know things, but then when you try to tailor that to television, where they're always telling you, "Hey, you've got 20 seconds to make your point." It's more difficult than it would seem on the surface. It's like writing poetry, you know, like how am I going to, I was talking to James Palmer from the NFL Network and cause he and I worked together in Houston for a while and we've kept up. And he was telling me when he has a 1 minute hit, he can make 3 points and it's like one or two sentences per point, or he can make 2 points and one statistic on top of that in time to explain the statistic. So if you think about, a minute to speak and say something pertinent about three different things, you've got to choose your words really wisely, which for somebody that's a broadcast professional is hard enough. When you're somebody who's been getting hit in the head for over a decade as a tight end, it's four times as difficult.
Yeah, it is. And especially because, and you saw this a little bit with Romo too, where they still had, it's like they just weren't away from the game maybe long enough because they were still dialed into this personal stakes conflict with every game you were watching. And I'm like, buddy, you're not out there anymore. It's okay.
Oh, so now were you with Romo, were you not as enthusiastic about him as a lot of people were?
Oh, I mean, right out of the gate, I couldn't stand him. I mean, I cannot, and I've never been able to. I thought the whole thing was just like such a farce. I mean,
really?
Oh,
I enjoyed him. I liked his enthusiasm. I
couldn't stand it.
I did.
People love it. I mean, a lot of people love it. They think it's great and infectious, and I understand it. But as someone who is trying to be aware of the fact that, like, what if this guy was behaving like that when I was playing? I would roll my eyes so hard they would like fly out of the back of my skull.
Oh yeah, so, yeah. If you were behaving that way around the guys or something, it would be annoying as hell. The thing that drove me nuts about him was that when he would call out the play, he would get it right, I would say, less than 50% of the time.
Right.
So it drove me insane that he's making an educated guess based on situation and coverage and pre-snap look and the tendencies that he already knows. And he actually wasn't all that impressive at it, but people just remembered, because what happens is they take the clips of the times he's right and they put him out there. So you see those on social media and everything, and it starts feeling like he's always right. I do think that as he's gotten further away from the game and from having like in-depth scouting reports as a player, it's you can tell that he hasn't put the work in. Like, he's not as prepared as he was 3 years ago. Yeah,
not at all. I think that's why it was so funny. Is I'm like, you guys clearly have not been watching like Troy Aikman or Chris Collinsworth,
right?
I mean, those guys are really good.
And they're prepared. Like, they know the teams. Yeah, that's
very
exactly
prepared.
Right.
They would bring up specific points about individual players and not just quarterbacks.
Yeah.
They would talk about linebackers. They would talk about the offensive line, and they would be completely on top of their game.
This is the difference, though, Drew. And this is what happens, is that everybody thinks that they want the technical breakdown, but really they're just lying to themselves, and they're saying what they're saying what they want people to perceive they are, which is, what I need is an in-depth technical breakdown with tendencies and formations and whatnot, when really what they want is a little bit of that, but a whole bunch of enthusiasm. So I think that's what Romo gives, because he's enthusiastic. So they want more John Madden. Like, in Madden was way smarter than he ever let on in the broadcast. Madden would just give you just the surface scratch of what he knew, you know, and he would kind of sneak in his thoughts about what was about to happen. He wouldn't make a huge display of it or anything. So it's just be enthusiastic and then throw in a little bit of technical talk.
You're so spot on with that. That's exactly what it is. I mean, they don't want to actually hear the clear, concise, accurate analysis.
Right.
They want to hear a mirror image of their own idiotic takes.
That's
what I think it is. Like, they want to hear their own justification in it. And then if it's ever wrong, we all have a short memory. That's fine. They'll move on to the next one. But
One thing Roma does a better job of, though, than some of the guys that do arguably better technical stuff, is he does take you to the kind of the first person experience. He'll talk about what it's like. Okay, this is what the quarterback is seeing. And I think a lot of the commentators, if they would do that more, just to be like, hey, this is what it feels like when you realize that the corner is blitzing and he's unaccounted for, stuff like that. Sometimes you get too into the X's and O's instead of the feeling about it. So I enjoy him. I think, much like Tim Tebow, my issue with Romo is more what people say about him than with Romo himself. Same way with Tebow. I don't think that many people actually dislike Tebow. I think they dislike what his most ardent supporters say about him, which, like, asinine things like, well, he only didn't make it because he's religious or because of religious persecution.
I mean, you're right. He's a great example of a lot of these public figures now, that the public figures themselves, and there's tons of celebrities like this, I feel like, that become disliked because of their followers and their fan base, just like Tebow, and not because of anything inherently that they're doing. It's because they have an obnoxious following.
And
that was the same way, where you're watching Tebow, like, it looked like he was like shot putting a rock in the ocean. And you have people just like, you know, defending it to oblivion. And it's insane.
Tebow's followers are to Tebow what David Koresh was to Jesus. Just a complete violation of all other standards and expectations and everything. So they're the true Tebowites are just a little too ardent. That's the problem. Yeah,
That's it. The Church of Tebow needs to be reined in.
I was the reason I asked you how much Tebow made was long chain to get to that, but there was a story that Dan Le Batard put out once. That Trent Dilfer was one of those guys that was trying to play hardball with ESPN, and that what happened when he finally left was that he had demanded a private jet fly him to his appearances for whichever games he was doing, which I don't think he was even doing games. Was he was a studio analyst, but he wanted a private jet to take him to and from his gigs on the weekend. And his argument was that Ohio State Kirk Herbstreit, Kirk Herbstreit got a private jet. And yeah, Kirk Herbstreit gets a private jet because he does college game day and then flies directly to a game and does color commentary that night, you know, and because he's like a huge asset to the station. He's the face of college football for a lot of people. But Trent Dilfer was one of these ESPN personalities that just didn't get it. They didn't realize, like, no, you're not private jet worthy. Do you know how much a private jet costs?
Yeah, it's outrageous. I remember when we would do charity events and they would throw in like a gift bag, like when you go to like the Oscars or something, you hear about these gift bags that people get, and they would throw in a gift bag and it would be like 4% off your next NetJets. And I was just like, awesome.
I can't wait.
It's like throwing a lawn chair off the Titanic. That is not enough.
What if you got audited and had to pay taxes on that 4% discount or something?
Exactly. You didn't disclose that this NetJets was discounted, sir. I apologize.
It's like $10,000 an hour for a mid-sized jet. Like $10,000 an hour, if you're going halfway across the country and it's a 3-hour flight, that's $30,000. It's $60,000 round trip. That's insane. Now for a smaller one, it's like, I don't know, but somewhere between $5,000 and $10,000. It's a lot of money. I crossed it off my list. There was one point in my life where I thought, you know, like at some point I'd like to have my own private jet. And now I'm at the point where I think that I'd have to be making an ungodly amount of money for me to have my own NetJets account or like have my own private jet, even if it was something I could totally afford. I just don't think I could do it.
No, the amount you have to be making to justify that kind of cost when you can just get like a sweet first class seat.
Yeah.
For one hundredth. Cost, depending on what you're, it's the scale is outrageous.
The thing that always stopped me, like when I was a player, when I had, you know, more expendable income that like I saved money, but I also didn't I spent money at a greater rate than what I knew I was going to spend in retirement. I splurged a little bit, you know, I could never really bring myself to do it because I knew that that one trip was a year's tuition for one of my relatives.
Right.
And like, I was like, I'll go ahead and fly first class and I'll take care of my sister for another year of grad school or something.
Right.
But I don't know. I guess you're making, how much would you have to be making to fly regularly on private jet? $10 million a year?
Oh God. Yeah.
Regularly.
But then at that point, then you're spending it's million, one of those things where it's all relative, right? It's like whenever I see people that have, I mean, even when I was in Chicago, you know, and there were guys like in the corporate world that I would bump elbows with, and they would have like a yacht year round on the lake. Which is an insane expense there, and you're only using it 2 months out of the year, and I'm just thinking like even if you're making $10 million, the rest of that money you're spending you could do so many other things with that money.
But they are so already. But things. You know what? They're
already doing it.
They could. Yeah, they're already doing that, or they're just doing like they're still saving an ungodly amount of money too. You know, so they're already saving an ungodly amount of money, and there's a part where you just look. The stuff that we spend money on, if you took somebody in a third world country and said, like, hey, do you know how much, Seth spent on lattes this year? They would totally say, like, well, I don't care how much money I'm making. I'm never going to be spending enough money to buy four yaks.
You know what, though?
I could buy my own yak and make yak's milk lattes for that amount of money.
I reject the premise. I reject the premise because that is a What do they call that? It's like, you know,
too real, too actual. Again. Yeah.
too on the nose.
Too, yeah. You know, like I could feed an entire village with how much I cost to get my truck lifted. Yeah. So you know what? It's easy to be a reverse snob and say that I would never actually do it, but I think I probably would. I think realistically, I'd have a jet. I would have like 7 flight attendants per person on the jet. I would do every gaudy, unimaginable, obnoxious thing if I had loads and loads of like, if I had billionaire money.
Well, are we, I mean, then you get into it where if there's an element of celebrity, like famedom, then it's obnoxious to travel everywhere all the time. So I can appreciate,
that's true. If you're like a Kardashian.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're like getting on a, because you're not protected just because you're in first class at that point. The guy sitting next to you in first class is going to talk your ear off.
Exactly.
Like you're just, yeah.
And I don't, you know, if I'm Kim Kardashian, I don't want to talk to you, sir. I don't.
Even if you're these days, even if you're YouTube famous, you probably get.
Yeah.
Is that you?
Yeah.
It's
been hard.
I was the reason I was actually thinking about all that was because I had to book out like 4 flights, and I did 4 flights 3 months in advance, and I feel like the most responsible and adult like I've ever been because I was counting all the money I was saving by actually doing it in advance. And I'm not to brag, but I'm platinum on United right now. And which means,
whoa,
I get to pick. Well, for one, if I fly on Wednesdays and Saturdays, there's a good chance I get bumped up. But if I don't fly on Saturdays and Wednesdays, then I can usually get the emergency exit row seat or definitely one of the premium extra legroom seats. And it's not bad. That's my version of private air travel from here on out.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny though how like we've just slowly over time they've degraded all the benefits to such a degree that your platinum status has earned you the ability to not be shoehorned in a middle seat in the back of a plane.
Crazy
how that Overton window has just completely shifted.
I'm such a sucker for the whole tier system too. Like they put that carrot on a stick, and I've been flying United almost exclusively. Like, you know, I've paid more on flights. I've given up better time slots just because I need that 1K status, man. I need that 1K. I need to be able to, I gotta get on in front of those people with small children and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know how many more miles I need, but I think these 3 flights are going to get me up to 1K, and then it'll be no stop. I think the only people they let on in front of 1K are the active service members. And one day, maybe if I get above 1K, I can like get an honorary enlistment in the Marines or something, and I can get on with those guys.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, I haven't had the ability to allocate all my miles into one airline. I've had this horrendous situation where I have to catch certain flights, and now, you know, it's all been divvied up. Yeah, a little bit. Well, I'm like, I'm status on American, which has been like pretty decent, but it's like my old boss was one of the people that it was like that movie with George Clooney where he was like the
up in the air.
Yeah, exactly. Where he's like the Uber platinum status, whatever it is. And he was that guy, and we had a connecting flight, and they brought a car out onto the tarmac.
Whoa.
And we got off the plane and they drove us on the tarmac to the other plane.
Nice.
We were running late
because he was like that super 1K, whatever.
Yeah,
it is.
Exactly. He was like the third most traveled person within the whole structure.
See, that's even in some ways is even better than flying private because then you don't have to organize anything at all. You're just organizing, getting your flight on the internet and everything, and then all that same stuff happens. What about when you were? Didn't you used to fly to Central America a lot?
Yeah, that was all American. I've done everything through American, but it's like, but they did that whole deal where I think it was United was the same way, where you know you have to like they don't accrue over time. Like you can't maintain your status if you take like a year of not traveling intensely. Yeah. And I like didn't do it for like a year, and then you know you have to basically start over.
Yeah, I'm in it for the long run, Drew.
Yeah, no, I respect that.
Yeah, I'm committed. I'm gonna keep the status, whether it breaks me financially. I'm gonna.
Do you
take
feel disappointed though? Do you remember? Do you not remember? Because I was doing. I used to be United too, and then they merged, and they kind of suck now. I'm not gonna force you to throw them under the bus on a podcast.
As somebody who would never risk his platinum status. by speaking ill of the company. I like to call it the company.
Oh, hold them hostage. Tell them if they don't get their act together.
You know what? I never do either. I don't like to at companies and complain about them on social media. I try to
mean how like 80% of my tweets are only mentioning AT&T
and politicians.
Yeah, there's one specific politician.
AT&T like, and John Cornyn.
Sweet spot. Yeah, those two.
Vile
bedfellows. Those two.
I was like, hey Drew, you should get your Twitter going. You're like, yeah, I'll do that.
No
three
problem.
Months later, I look like there's a tweet about John Cornyn from 3 years ago. A bunch of AT&T. I'm going to pay. I should pay you in customer service complaints. I'll go. Yeah. I'll complain publicly and they'll have to respond to it because I've got at least a little. I've got a few Twitter followers and all that. So that's your payment from now on. That and discounts on NetJets flights.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Please use that sway.
I found when I was looking this up, actually, I was looking up something on air travel. And there was a Reddit thread with a whole bunch of flight attendants on there and pilots talking about what you don't know about the flight industry. This one I'm skeptical of. I don't know, because, you know, Reddit, you never know for sure on these people on Reddit if they are who they say they are. This guy says he's a pilot here. Don't drink the coffee. The water comes from the onboard system that has the fill port right next to the port the lavatories are drained from. The water system routinely fails E. coli checks. Also, when you wash your hands using the same water, make sure you always use the soap. Lastly, don't put your food directly on the tray tables. Well, of course, I wouldn't put the food, like, you're not going to put your biscuit on one of those tray tables.
Well, you don't know. Yeah, don't you flip the tray over and you use the table as a plate? That's not how you.
Is that you how do you that? Do it? Like with a, if it's yeah. a foldable one,
exactly. Yeah, I flip it over and then I eat directly off the tray.
Because you figure that was the on the underside, nobody would ever put anything on that.
Exactly,
they would never put their grimy fingers on it. I'm not know if I'm gonna keep drinking the coffee. Yeah, I figure the coffee's hot enough that it's gonna kill the germs, won't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and I just think the E. coli thing. You're not dodging that bullet. If people were getting E. coli, it'd be over.
One of the flight attendants. You're right. Yeah, if it were really an issue, there'd be getting a ton of people getting mm-hmm. sick all the time. Okay. Another flight attendant said that 90% of their training is for the 0.1% of the job that they hope they never have to use. It's all emergency training. So she says, listen to me, look, the picture's of a woman. Okay. So I'm not, I'm
no,
not,
I got it. You're a 1950s viewpoint.
You see the picture here. It's a female flight attendant.
Uh-huh. The stewardess. Yeah.
I went to the air waitress.
Yeah.
Went to training for 6 weeks and spent 3 days on service. They trained to fight fires, treat medical emergencies, evacuate a plane in record time, and much more. Service is still a very important part of the job, but the majority goes into emergency situations. I don't know if I'm buying that they only spend 3 days on service. Is that possible? I guess it's.
I mean, it tracks based on my experience.
Yeah. Well, this is the problem.
Their service is. I mean, I'm not going to like sit here and try to romanticize when I was younger and it was fantastic, but
yeah.
I don't remember it being quite as like hostile as it is now.
I think they get treated more hostily too. And plus people are perpetually disappointed that they're not getting meals or that their meal is only a snack and the snacks have even gotten great. I feel like there's less salt on the pretzels than there used to be. I think that you should be able to leave tips via an app for your flight attendants.
I agree.
I used to think feedback, but I don't think like the flight attendants unions are pretty strong. I don't think they probably allow that or go for that, but I think they would go for tips.
They just don't give a shit. Like that's the bigger point. They definitely, my energy, but the take that I get from them is they give no shits. That is not their energy is like when they're flying down the aisle with that cart. And I know this has happened to you and they just obliterate your elbow.
Yeah.
And they don't even say anything now. Now it's just like they bash it and just keep cruising right down the aisle, barely losing any speed.
Sorry about your bursa sack. Yeah.
I apologize for the elbow fracture.
Do you think the reception area at the flight attendants union is just a receptionist sitting in a jump seat staring at you hostily? Like you walk in. You walk in and she's just staring at you, begging you to ask her for something that she'll refuse. Point to the seatbelt sign or something.
Yes.
I've been treated very well by the flight attendants in my life, including we landed at Bush in Houston a couple weeks ago. and we were stuck on the tarmac for, I think it was an hour and 15 minutes. Mm. And I had to pee super bad. And all I did was I politely asked if I could, you know, I made the motion and I made the motion to my bladder.
Yeah. Which
he could have, boy, that could have gone south.
You pointed at your crotch and you did like a weird shake.
I kind of went like that and pointed at the bathroom. And she accurately interpreted my intentions instead of thinking that I was like, you know, suggesting
that you were twist or something. Her a ride on your groin. Yeah.
And I did the old finger in the index loop thing and everything.
Yeah, exactly. Like the old J-O motion. And she said. Yeah.
She let me use the bathroom. So I feel like most airline employees, if you're super polite to them, they appreciate it because they've been treated like shit 10 times mm-hmm. that day. Just like in real life, like when somebody's treated poorly in relationships and whatnot.
Oh yeah. You're not going to win that battle by trying to be rude to them.
All right. So good. We got a lot of good football talk in today. What did we learn? Tim Tebow probably not flying private jets unless he's been unless a mega pastor from a mega church is flying him on that. Or actually, okay, Tebow flies on private jets all the time because University of Florida definitely flies in places to talk to people. And then a lot of these evangelical mega churches and everything have their own private jets too. So they're probably flying him in to talk to places. And,
I could see that. He's going to get on that circuit for sure. I'm excited to see what the next sport is that he tries to take on.
Politics. He was born in the Philippines. Is he a natural born U.S. citizen?
Oh, God. What a great conspiracy theory. Did you want to start one?
No.
We can launch this right here. You heard it here first. Seth says that he's not in.
I don't like getting into that debate, especially because there seems to be no actual correct answer to it. That was honestly, it was one of those areas from the Constitution where you're reminded the per capita alcohol consumption back then was absurd. These guys were drunk all the time because they put in natural born citizen in the Constitution with no real definition for what a natural born U.S. citizen is. So there's all kinds of ideas about exactly what it is, but you can argue a lot about it. Kind of like the Second Amendment is just, it's written very, very poorly. And you can mount a really strong argument for whatever you want because there's a few either errantly or haphazardly placed commas that make it super confusing. Like there's these stupid, a man as brilliant as James Madison can't be bothered to sit and like proofread exactly what the Second Amendment looks like.
Well, isn't the argument? I mean, we're both obviously constitutional scholars.
Yes.
clearly.
No, like honestly,
if you've ever wanted to go somewhere where two people knew less about the topic, they're going to pretend like they're educated on. But I've heard
that
was all by design. That the ambiguity is there is a level of intent behind the ambiguity.
Oh no! That's people that comes from a day back when people like worshipped the first the founding fathers. Like they
every
were
mistake
almost,
was on
yes,
purpose.
No, because there's also I don't know. I had one history teacher tell me that like look they didn't think this thing was going to last more than 40 or 50 years. They figured it'd have to be revised at some point. And I mean it was.
We almost made it. 200. Look at us.
What's that? Well, I mean they revised. They added amendments and whatnot. No. But the actual just if you read certain parts of the Constitution, it's especially the Second Amendment, you can see where I can see where people on both sides of any topic concerning the Second Amendment can feel like, no, it's clear. It says it this way. And then the other person says, no, it's clear. What they mean is this. So I don't know. So I stay the hell out of it. And I just I drink more, just like the founding fathers. Did you know that only 10%? At the time of the revolution, only 10% of Americans belonged to a church. It was like for as often as the founding fathers get cited in various religious arguments and whatnot, they were now I don't there. I mean, there weren't. I think that doesn't mean only 10% of people believed in God or only 10% were Christians, but they weren't nearly as devoutly religious as they would become when really what happened was.
Well, politicians hadn't weaponized it yet.
Well, that, but also because people were
they hadn't unlocked the cheat code to getting people to vote for you.
There were still, people were coming from England where they're just, even the Protestant Reformation was still relatively strict and there was a Church of England, you know? And it was kind of like the blossoming and proliferation of different ideologies within mm-hmm. Christianity that really exploded, because it was like feel free to explore the room, and people did, and it got that's when things got crazy. And I think it was so early, whenever the first revival was, like the first the awakening. I don't know. It was a different time. So now we're way off the rails. So
no, this is a good segue into our other podcast, which is made up almost mostly true American history facts.
do you doubt the 10%?
No, I believe it. I'm pretty confident in any of the anecdotes you threw out there.
No, you know what though? But I was on an audio book that I was listening to as I was driving. So I'll fact check it right now. Belong to what was the name of that book? It was These Truths. It was so look up the book These Truths. We'll talk about that next time. All right, I gotta run, buddy. I gotta go buy more coach seats on off travel days and hope that I get bumped up to first class.
I like it.
Living the dream.
All right, man.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's not just about watching the game, it's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it, it's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.